if it's easily achievable, then you would have done it already. And it, you know, every other business like yourself will get, will just naturally organically grow. You know, you would, that's how you have to set yourself apart from other businesses.
Welcome to the Earn Your Happy podcast. I'm Lori Harder, founder of The Bliss Project, three-time fitness world champion, fitness expert, and cover model turned self-love junkie, lifestyle entrepreneur, and author. Each week, I'll bring you a guest or a thought that will help you bust through your fears, connect to your soul, and get focused and clear so you can elevate your life, business, and relationships. We don't wait until we're ready for someone to tell us we're good enough. We take what we want and we anoint ourselves. Get ready to earn, own, and unapologetically rock your happiness every single day. Are you with me? Here we go. Welcome back to the show. And today's guest is Jane Liu. She is the founder of Shopo, which started in 2010 in her parents' garage and is now an online global fashion empire shipping to over 100 countries. And she did this through being disruptive in the retail space and capitalizing on the use of social media. And Shopo now boasts a cult following of over 3.3 million engaged followers collectively. And she has a team of over 90 across Sydney in her headquarters and distribution center. So Jane Liu has so much enthusiasm for entrepreneurship, and she set off to start her first business, which failed spectacularly, which she will share all about. And she was undeterred and got right back into business, starting an online fashion brand the following month. And now she's a regular keynote speaker for some of Australia's biggest brands. She's been on stages for audiences internationally, and she won Entrepreneur of the Year in 2015 and Forbes 30 Under 30 in Asia. You guys, this woman has done so much in such a short period of time, and she truly is somebody who I feel is so incredibly relatable. I really loved her story, and I wanted to ask questions so that you could see what she tangibly did when she started this online clothing empire. So if you feel like you have an idea, this is definitely a podcast for you, taking it from the very beginning of the idea, from when it feels crazy, from your parents thinking you're insane, from your friends and family thinking you're nuts, to where all of a sudden it starts making money, and then you continue on. So I really love how she talks about, no matter where you're at, it's going to feel like chaos. And that really helped just for so many different places that I've been and where I'm going, and remembering that everybody feels this way. So you guys, listen into this interview and we're going to get started. Jane, I'm so excited to have you on the show. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Very excited.
Where are you at right now? Because you said you were traveling.
Yes. So I'm actually in New York, which makes this time difference a whole lot better than if I was, I'm normally based out of Sydney.
Okay. I'm like dying to get over to Sydney. So tell us a couple things that you love about Sydney.
Oh, well, I hate to start a podcast by talking about the weather, but you know, now that I'm here in New York, which it has just experienced a polar vortex, the weather is amazing and I shouldn't ever take it for granted. We have a lot of beaches. And just, it's very laid back culture, so which is great. And it's a great, I don't know, it's just, you know, when your home is there, everything's just beautiful. But it's just, it's so far from everything else. That's probably the one thing. Mm-hmm. It's our nearest other country. It's like 6 hours to get to. But
oh my gosh, yeah. Well, at least it's paradise when you're there.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I'm so excited to have you on today because you have built such an incredible business, and I really want to know about the entire journey. So I would love if you would just share a little bit about how that all started.
Okay, great. Start now?
Yeah.
Okay, well, so basically I can't even believe I'm in the position I'm in now, because I'm literally doing the thing that I something I truly love, and I just never imagined this for myself because I actually used to be an accountant.
And that's so crazy.
I hate accounting. I hate it's accounting and finance, which is just the driest. I'm so sorry to offend any accountants, but it's not for me because I think you need to have an intention for detail. But I'm like a big picture, blah, blah, kind of a person. So I started working in accounting because it seemed like a career that would offer you a secure future, because my parents and I were actually from China and we immigrated when I was 8. And so my parents, you know, it's that whole immigrant sob story where, you know, they left their jobs, their families, their careers, and then they started working in factories and worked as cleaners just so they could make sure that I could build a future, a brighter future which meant for them job security and financial security, which is why, you know, for me, all I had ever known was just go down the corporate route, the academic route, the corporate route, and then just to climb the corporate ladder. And so when I turned 18, I actually got offered this very exclusive cadetship program, which meant I actually started working at KPMG, which is one of the big four accounting firms, at the age of 18.
Wow.
And so at the time, I was loving it. You know, you start having an income, you're doing Friday night drinks, and I was actually excited to wear a suit. I know, so naive when you're 18. And then so I did that for about 3 years and just realized that it was not for me. Like, I hated cubicle life, and I realized how bad I am at accounting. And I just, you know, it was actually this one specific moment I realized. I was on behind my computer the whole day, staring at spreadsheets, and I realized that, you know, it's been 3 hours. 3 hours have just passed, so that meant I'm literally 3 hours more dead than I was. Sorry to get morbid, but like, wow. I was like 3 hours more dead, and all I've done is remove this circular referencing from a spreadsheet, which means nothing. And now I'm going to go drown my sorrows in a meatball sub. And I'm like, how is this my life? This can't be. I cannot do this for the next, I don't know, 50 years. So I thought I had to do something else. And then so a friend came to me and she said, hey, do you want to start a business? And I was like, yes, like without even caring about what the business was in. We ended up getting to business together. We started running pop-up stores in underutilized locations. So like a bar that's not busy during the day, we would set up a market store and we started selling stuff from emerging designers. And, you know, the business model wasn't very good. But, you know, you're just so passionate when you start. You just want to make, you're just like, if I just work really hard, I'll make it work. I don't care, I'll make it work. So then I quit my job to work on the business. And then my business partner told me that she didn't want to do the business anymore. So all of a sudden, despite having everything, so I had, you know, I had always achieved, I always had really good marks at school. I got this, my dream, what I thought was my dream job when I was 18. And I had financial security for, you know, when you're studying, I was at uni, everyone's worried about what job they can get. I was one of the lucky ones that already had this before you start uni or college, whatever. But then all of a sudden I lost it all. I was unemployed. I had a failed business. I lost all of the money, all my life savings, all the money that I earned, I've lost in the business. And it was in the middle of the global financial crisis. So it meant that I couldn't actually get another job. So I literally hit rock bottom. And, you know, I kind of grew up with this major fear of failure and just couldn't believe that I got myself into this mess. And so because I couldn't get, no one was hiring for other jobs at that time, I thought I had to start another business. And then because, you know, I was like, well, all I know is accounting and finance or fashion retail from the pop-up store. Even though that had failed, I'm like, well, if I've got the opportunity to kind of like create my own future, not going to do anything in accounting and finance. So I guess by default, I started a business. And then by default, I started a business in fashion retail. And that was Shopo.
Wow. So when you were, obviously you were like, I'm not going back to accounting because that was enough pain in the beginning to be like, I'm not going back. And you were at rock bottom. Number one, how long did you feel like you kind of stayed there. What did you do to start thinking of solutions? And what was the next step after that?
Yes. Yeah, so I think I probably spent about, I was quite lucky. I probably spent a month just feeling so lost. And it was actually really hard at the start because for the first 6 months, I started Shopo within a month, but then even the first 6 months of Shopo, I was actually, because I was living at home at the time, I was also an only child. So my parents kind of put all their eggs in the Jane basket. And then my parents sacrificed so much for me that I couldn't actually tell them that I had lost it all. I'd given it all up to start a business that had failed. So I just didn't tell them. So for 6 months, I just pretended to go to work. So I would get up early, and I'm not a morning person. So getting up early sucks when you're sucks when you're unemployed and getting up for no reason. Mm-hmm. But then I would have to put on my suit, which at this point felt like a clown suit. I just hated it so much. And then I would have to get the bus into the city with my mom because she works in the city. So I had to put up this facade for 6 months. So it kind of like made me go, it made me not get complacent and like have to like create change. So for the first month, I kind of just tried to speak to as many people as I could. But, you know, at the time, all of my friends were corporate. I didn't even have any, you know, there were no podcasts to listen to for inspiration. And if you wanted to buy an inspirational book, it was still like only like the Richard Bransons, like the people who have like really made it really big and, you know, it just seemed really unattainable. Or, you know, I even have sitting at home, the Dummy's Guide to Retail, just like very in between, you know? So I just really felt so lost and didn't know what to do. I had no one to speak to. Luckily I had just the one friend who had his own business, and I approached him, hoping secretly that I could just get a job with him and then learn a lot from him. But he was like, oh, I actually know someone else who wants to start a business. She wants to get into fashion retail. Let me introduce you to her. And honestly, like, you know, I'm quite skeptical and didn't think it was going to go anywhere. But, you know, when we met, we instantly hit it off. Mm. And within, I think the third time we met, we had too many glasses of red wine together and decided to start Shopo together. Mm. And that's kind of how it all started.
Okay, so I love that, you know, red wine was the catalyst. Red wine has been a couple catalysts for me. Yeah. So for you, first of all, if you would just kind of share with everybody what Shopo is so they can get the overall picture of what it is now, because I want to like rewind to the beginning, because I think there's so many people who, whether it's a business model similar to this or something that they want to start on the side, like also give them the permission to not put a cap on themselves, because I'm sure if you would have done that, it would not be what it is today. So first of all, if you could tell us what it is, and then we'll go back to where the next step after that.
Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely. To give some context. So Shopo is an online, we're an online fashion store for women 16 to 36, but we started off just being a retailer, but you know, in the last 5 years, we've really grown out our design team. So we've got half the styles that we put out, which is we release 150 new styles a week on our website, and half of the designs are our own. So we have, we're more than just a retailer now. I guess we're a brand, a retail store. And what something I'm really proud of is that I think we're more than just like a fashion brand, in that we do so much of our own original content. Mm-hmm. And so the brand in itself is just, it's more than just the fashion itself. So it's quite exciting.
And you've created a community, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've had your red wine. You've decided to start a business. Where on earth do you start? Are you like, how do we get these clothes? How do we put them out? Were you always interested in clothing?
Yeah. So I actually, that's the thing. I mean, I love clothes, but I don't have a passion for fashion. Mm-hmm. Just because like I look at the girls that work with me, like I can truly say they have a passion for fashion. Mm-hmm. And I just can't. I'm just not in that. Like, I just love clothes, but I really love marketing. I love building a business. I love content. And so I think that's kind of like also a point of like a competitive advantage, point of differentiation for Shopo. And so the only, you know, what's really what I love is just the fact that it's everything that Chopra has kind of evolved to become is kind of off the back of the failed business, which at the time I was like, Jane, you idiot. Why would you do this? I was very self-loathing about how I even like got into that first business and letting it fail and everything that had happened. But then I realized that everything Chopra is now is from that. So what I mean is that business, we sold emerging products from emerging designers. So your price range is from 70 to like 300 and upwards. And then from that, I realized, and this is before, because, you know, fast fashion is really big right now, but at the time it wasn't so much. And, you know, the designer brands were still a lot more prominent, I guess, than they are now. Mm-hmm. So at the time when we had the pop-up store, I saw how big the growth in fast fashion was, which is why I knew like that's the sector within the fashion industry I wanted to get into. And then I saw how laborious and unscalable bricks and mortar was. I mean, it is, but it's so much easier to scale up an online store. So I knew that that's what I was going to do. We did a lot of the traditional marketing methods like flyer drop and like advertising and like print advertising and PR, which was just so expensive for a startup. So with Chopra, I wanted to focus on social media. And then, you know, so and even in terms of stock, like I've never heard of the term consignment before, which means that you don't have to pay for a product until it sells. So with Fatboy, the pop-up store, we were able to work with all of our designers on a consignment basis. So which is why we were able to get in 50 designers, and then we only paid them after anything sold. And so when I started Chopra, I actually was $60,000 in debt, which is like not the position you want to be in anyway, but especially not when you're trying to start a business. And so how I overcame that was, so I think when you start a business, an online store, your two main costs are your inventory, your stock, and your marketing. So in terms of the stock and inventory, I realized, I knew that there was this consignment term that we can work on. So I said to my business partner, who had a lot more connections than I do, I was like, you know, we should just get someone on consignment, which means then we can really test the market and we don't have to outlay any cash because I don't have any. Yeah. And then she found us a supplier that could sell us on consignment. And that was our first supplier, and we still work with them. And that was great because I didn't know anything about fashion. I didn't know what people wanted to buy. So we just took a sample of every style they had, which was only 40 at the time, took photos on the weekend using a free model and then we put it on the website. And so then only had to fulfill the stock once it's sold, which was a lot of manual labor because I had to go in every morning and pick all the stock and to fulfill it for that day. But, you know, at the time, you know, time I had a lot of, but money I didn't. So that was fine. And then I think that your other main costs, like the other main hurdle to starting a business is marketing. Mm-hmm. But I kind of got in the whole social media wave before it became still felt big at the time, but it wasn't as pronounced as it is now. And, you know, I started the business eight and a half years ago in 2010, you know, and in Australia, which might be a couple of years behind the States, I guess. But we still, you know, our main powerhouse retailers, the big ones, they weren't on social media at all. Mm. They were barely on online. Even if they had websites, they were more like catalog websites. They weren't selling on their websites. So, you know, they kind of looked at social media as probably just a fad and they didn't believe in it or they just didn't get it. Mm. And so I started using social media because I couldn't afford any of traditional marketing methods. Mm-hmm. And just it kind of, and, you know, selling to millennials, like what better way? So I think that's kind of how it was able to just grow from the ground up. So we never taken on external investment. And even though I was $60,000 in debt, we've grown from that. Like I was just in my, it was a garage business and now we have 150 staff.
Wow. And what are you projected for this year, if you don't mind sharing, so people can kind of know what you have created?
Yeah, we have, we're a $60 million business at the moment. but hoping to get to 100 mil. Oh, no, sorry, 100 mil Australian.
It's still really great.
Yeah.
I know, like, hold on, let me correct that. It's all good.
Yeah. No, so it's, I think, so actually it's really funny. So a few years ago, I'm going slight tangent, but I love the story. As a few years ago, the team was still at around 15 people. So now we're at 150, just to give you context of the growth. We had 15 people and I wanted to take our website development in-house because, you know, having like a agency build your website, like everything was stalling. And so I spoke to a recruiter and then he basically said, like, you know, look, if you want to, we wanted a head of technology, a chief technology officer. And he basically said, you know, if you want that person, you need to make him a co-founder. You need to give him equity. Essentially what he's saying is like, no one wants to join your fashion business if you don't give them more, because you're not going to get a really good tech person believing in it, you know? And I was like, screw you. Like, do not come to my office and tell me what to do and mansplain how to get a CTO. So I was like, you know what? And he said, you're not going to get to your 100 million revenue target without getting a tech co-founder. And I said, you know what? I'm going to get there. I'm going to get to 200 mil and I'm going to get there by 2020. And get out of my office. I didn't say, but essentially get out.
And then, now I have to do that.
Yeah. I'm like, uh-oh. But now I think we'll probably get to that goal this year, which is really exciting. Wow. Like before 2020.
Okay. That's amazing. And I love how you can just like embody it and it just is. But back in the day, I'm sure if you said those words, it would be like, are you kidding me? Like, how did you become the person who could start to think of these big numbers and just accept them fully and like welcome them into your life and go for it?
So I think that number was probably the biggest I've thrown out, but like, and that was after like quite a few years of already having a sustainable business, a growing business. But, you know, at the start, I think it's all, for me, it's about having the small incremental goals. Like I remember I went to this business course and they said, you know, put down your next five, like your five goals for the next 3 years. And if it doesn't seem unachievable, then it's not big enough. Mm-hmm. Like if it doesn't seem big and crazy. And even then I didn't have the confidence and belief in myself that it was going to be that. Anything that I've achieved now, did not write down. Like I didn't believe in myself that much. I remember writing, I wanted to be featured in Business Review Weekly, which is one of the big business publications in Australia. And, you know, that was my big goal. But we ended up getting featured later that year. And I think that publication doesn't even exist anymore. But so for me, it's all about the small goals. And I think having a big goal, like 100 mil when I was starting, wanting like this many staff members, the big, beautiful office that we have now, the opportunity to travel and do all the things that I'm doing. I think if I had those goals at the start, I probably would have like actually scared myself too much because, you know, any moment you really had a setback, you just feel so much further away from that goal that I probably would have made me want to give up a lot more. So for me, it was just literally at the start, my first goal was I just needed to make enough money so I can just get by. And then I wanted to make enough money so I was making more than my accounting job so then I could justify it to my parents. And then I wanted to like prove that like because with my first business failing, I wanted to prove to my ex-business partners that I wasn't the screw up. So, and it wasn't my fault. So I wanted, you know, I think I was driven by a bit of spite. I mean, even this story about the recruiter who told me I needed a tech co-founder, like I feel like that gave me this ounce of spite that really pushed me to keep going. So it's all about, I think for me, those little goals, like what's next. And now, and I think it's only now that we have like a big team and I realize that it's not just about like motivating myself, but it's motivating the team and like inspiring others. And, you know, because you have people that they're working for more than just the income. They believe in the business. So it's really, you know, now more important than ever to have like a vision and the big goal for everyone to work towards. But for me, like my personal style is just like what's what's the next step?
There's so many places I could go, but first I'm going to ask you, you know, having your parents not necessarily support you and maybe having some other people who were like, you need to do this or you need to do that, like really telling you what to do. How did you focus in on just like getting really, you know, linear focused on what you wanted to do and what you needed to do next and not get stopped up by opinions or worrying about what your parents would think?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of just, that's why I lied to them, because I didn't want them to tell me, like, because I knew if I had told them every day they would have said, because they don't understand how starting a business works, because they both have worked for companies, they would ask me every day, have you made money yet? Are you successful? Have you made it? Like, so, and I every day, not only when you have to kind of reassure yourself and back yourself, you have to reassure them, which it just seems like that would be so hard to do. And you would just be filled with so much more self-doubt. So yeah. So, I mean, I guess I got through it by lying to them.
I love that though, because it's like, there's so much about it's more about just showing them, because no matter what you would have said anyway, it wouldn't have mattered.
Yes. To show, not tell. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I think, yeah. And in terms of like, you know, all of my friends who work corporate, when I told them I was going to quit to start a business, they told me that I was an idiot. Like, because this is like, no one like started a business back then. They thought I was stupid. So, and then when my business failed, I was like, yeah, I think they were right. So then I really just kind of like avoided, you know, going out, seeing some people, which I think it's fine because I couldn't really afford to go out. But I don't even know if this is the best thing, but I kind of just like avoided the situation. I was hanging out with my business partner a lot, and just kind of, and that's the thing. I think it's about surrounding yourself with like good, like-minded people. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say to surround yourself with people who will tell you what you want to hear. Mm-hmm. You do want to, you know, you still want people to be pushing and challenging you. But I think there's also, you need to find the right people, because sometimes people will put you down. I think what's funny is some of those people who told me that I shouldn't have started it, to not start a business, because they're like, what do you know about fashion? What do you know about starting a business? They've come to me later to say that they want to start their own fashion business. So what became evident was that, you know, me doing what they're too scared of doing brought out insecurities in themselves of what, whether they should do it or not. Mm. You know, so I think, but then you also don't want people to be like, you know, just to tell you, just to pat you on the back. Cause I think at the time, I mean, my boyfriend always tells me, like, you know, he will always kind of like tell me to be rational. Sometimes I'm like, oh, you know, it's fine if I just like get a job so that it'll be fine. Even if the business just makes enough so that I'm making more than my accounting job. Right. He's like, no, that's not why, you know, then you've just created a job so that you work in retail. You haven't, but you want to start a business. You want to build like a company. You don't want to work in retail yourself. So don't just create a job. You know, you still want people to bring you down, bring you back to reality. So it's about finding the good people. Like, you know, they say you are the product of five closest people around you. And I find so much truth in that. And actually, can I segue into my business group? Because I think this is kind of why I did it. So we, another girl who has her own business, Jen George, her and I, we've been through a lot together, and we thought, you know, why don't we get a group of girls to get together who have their own businesses? We can just whinge about how, like, all the bad times about having a business, and we can have people to celebrate our wins with and have a drink, get some wine, and just talk. And so we had this group of 20 girls get together, and we had so much fun. Just like, you know, everyone's just like on the same wavelength, all very like-minded people. I'm like, okay, let's just create a Facebook group so then we can do this regularly. And I'm like, and then we can make it public so we can invite our friends to come along. And we're like, oh, what should we call it? And this is just a group of 20 people in it. We're like, let's call it Like-Minded Bitches Drinking Wine, because that's exactly what we are. And so we're like, okay, no big deal. And so that was 3 years ago, and now we have almost 100,000 members.
So that's always how it happens.
Yeah. Oh. It just really shows that there's like a real demand for it. And I think, you know, the feedback in the group is just like, you know, there's just, if you jump on, you ask a question about business, you've got instantly almost, you have 50 other people, women giving you advice and just speaking from their own experience. And I think just having, like, I wish I had something like that when I started, which is why I'm so passionate about this. Just having people not people telling you what to do, but people speaking from their own experience. I think I find that so, like, so much more useful. And I think just, you know, and that's why you have the podcast. You have people sharing their experiences. That's what I think. It's when you go through the tough times, you don't just refer to what you've read in the book. It's someone's story that about how they overcome their adversity. I think that's what resonates with you, and that's kind of the motivation you need to keep going. So anyway, so that's, I feel like, you know, having the right people around you is what really helps. In summary.
Oh my God, it's so important because you are going to default to either, you're going to default to the opinions and ideas of the people who are closest to you. And if that's someone telling you you can't, that's where you're going to go. So that's exactly what we always talk about too, is just like, who are you going to go talk to when things are down? Because that's going to determine your next step. So you have I feel like you have so much valuable wisdom on marketing. And I want to tell you, for people listening, they're either in first phases of kind of marketing themselves as a business, or marketing a business that they have, or it's people who have been around a while who are like, what should we know about marketing our business that we are not, or that we're missing?
Yes. So, I mean, there's all the obvious stuff that I'm sure you know, about being authentic and posting. I'm not going to go through all of that stuff that everyone can get from elsewhere. I guess what's really worked for me is like taking risks. In social media, like in terms of, and the thing about not just social media, in marketing in general, because I think there's, you know, that you can look at what's, well, okay, sorry. The first step is you should see what other people are doing, because the answers are right there. So it's stupid not to do something that's already working, but that you can't just stop there. So what I mean is, if you have like a shoe company, and you're on Instagram, look at your Instagram account and look at that of like a brand that you love, and look at the difference. So all the things that they're doing, like, you should be doing, you know, you should give that, not all of them, but, you know, it kind of, their team has already done the research of what works. And then the best thing about like something like social media is your audience tells you what they want. You've got instant feedback from the engagement, the likes and comments, and then the analytics. But then I think the thing is, it's all about doing what's different, what's not done, because there's so much noise right now. And I can't tell you what that is, but what was great for us was, for example, when what kind of gave ShowPro its first lift was when we started, and this is me again, like drinking red wine, coming up with a great idea, but I was at home on the couch, in my tracksuit pants, feeling really sorry for myself, and drinking red wine, and then watching America's Next Top Model. And then they had this, for that season, they said that they would have an audience favorite and that everyone can vote in to pick that person. And then so at this time, Facebook Fangate was on. And so you had to like follow a page so that you can engage with it. And I was like, oh my God, why don't we do this? So we did this a model competition, and then we asked our followers to enter because they're all within our demographic. And then what these girls ended up doing was that they created Facebook events, Facebook groups, and reached out to their entire network, all of their friends, to ask them to vote for them. And then some of their friends would go and enter themselves and then ask their entire lists of friends to go and vote for them. So it had this amazing ripple effect. And we went from 3,000 followers to 20,000 in a month for free. It was free. And this is 20,000 followers in 2011. Like, 20,000 is a lot now, but in 2011, that was huge. That puts us higher than most other like fashion businesses in Australia. And so we had this so much credibility from that. And what that taught me was how powerful social media was. And it taught me that before a lot of other people realized. And I think that was what was really important. And also taught me how great growth hacks are. So, and how powerful they are. So I think from that point on, we just kept trying different things. And, you know, the great thing about stuff on social media, like, I mean, things on the internet, they say it never goes away, but you know, you can delete them. So it's just really important to like, just to try different things, and also just to have like a niche. Cause I think what's really great these days is like, you can really afford to be niche and really have like a strong, unique brand, but have that to have a big viral effect. Because it's like when you're trying to please everyone, you end up pleasing no one. Mm. So you just kind of, the world is so big and the internet has made it so globalized. Like you just kind of really hone in on what you are. And I think as your brand grows, you can slowly evolve and do more and be more. But I think that consistency, you know, is at the start is so important.
Mm. Was there a tipping point for you as far as your company and as your social growth? Were they two different things? And what do you think they were?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the main milestones that have helped us grow was, I mean, at first it's this social media hack, because then I just went way harder on social media. So I think the thing about finding a growth hack is once you do that, you've got a license to print money, because you just double down on it and that dries up. Until then, you just keep going hard. Mm. But it will dry up. People will copy it. Other people will think of it. It'll happen. But so that was great. And then I think just for us, there was investing in more inventory and buying more stock, because, you know, from social media, we started getting the traffic. So once we backed that up with more stock, we were just getting more sales. Everything was just working really well. I mean, we had four people working with us and we had achieved $1 million a month in sales, which is like pretty incredible, I guess. And then the next big step was really hiring a bunch of really professional people who were much smarter than us. Because, you know, up until then we were hiring people like younger than us, less experienced, but hiring experts really helped us grow.
Mm. And you had to hire them, obviously, I'm sure, before you felt ready.
Yeah. Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm just like, it's just so scary because you don't even know how to find these people and how to interview them. And you're really scared because if they are wrong and not great, they can really lead you astray, and you won't even know until it's way too late, because it's so beyond your own capabilities.
So how did you know, and did you take the risk on people, and did it all turn out, or was it that you learned really quickly when it was wrong?
Well, so I got very lucky a lot of times people say, you know, get yourself a mentor, you need a mentor. And I will always say, you don't need a mentor. Like everyone talks about needing a mentor. I got we got to our $1 million a month without a mentor. I was like, don't like get too hung up on it. You meet someone great, that's good. But I kind of kept saying that for years, but I ended up finding a mentor who was just a lot more experienced with hiring and just talking the talk with professionals. So he kind of really helped. He was like the final round interview for a lot of these professionals. Mm. So, and I think, you know, like he's fantastic, but you know, for someone else who's starting, I would say the thing is asking someone to be a mentor is like such a big, like it's a big burden, like not a big burden, it's a big commitment for that person. Mm-hmm. And everyone, they might not be an expert in everything that your business is doing, because otherwise they would just do your business, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's about finding experts in each field. So, you know, if you want to hire a really great marketing person, maybe just find someone else that you really respect to just do that final round interview and to screen just for that particular role. And I think that's what I would do if I didn't have that contact already.
Mm. So what is advice for the business person who is trying to get to their next level? Like, how do you analyze kind of where you're at, what your blocks are? Do you do something every month or every quarter? What do you do with your team to say, where are we really at? And what are we, you know, what's a blind spot that maybe we're not seeing? And what do you bring in to get to the next level?
Yeah, I mean, as a team, we have our strategy days, but I think particularly for everyone who is listening, what's something that myself and my general manager, who she's been with me for 6 years and helped me grow the business, what's something that we've done that's really helped us is we write out all of our problems and then you kind of, you mind map it in a way that you can see that this problem leads to that problem. It's kind of hard to explain, I guess, but like, you kind of dump every single problem you have. And then what you'll find that is like, you end up finding the root causes for these problems, which sounds easy that you're just saying it, but you'd be surprised how much it's not until you just really put it down to paper. Because so, for example, we realized that we had all these little problems. Like, I mean, I won't listen bore you, but we had all these problems, and then we realized the problem is that we weren't hiring properly and that we were hiring too slowly. And so we realized that we needed to, but it wasn't just hiring these experts that I was saying, that we needed to bring in a head of people and culture, which I think sounds really crazy for a business that has about 15 employees to do. Mm-hmm. But that's when we decided to bring in a really senior HR professional to help us. Mm. And so, and I think that's all just from realizing that for example, we're doing a campaign shoot and the campaign isn't what we envisioned. But that comes down to like, we didn't have someone to own the campaign process. So like, it's all these different levels of problems that trickle down to the fact that we needed someone to help us hire more professionally and hire faster and better.
Mm. Okay. So question for you, for someone who has a smaller team, and you know, I know a lot of people who work from home with their businesses like me, we have a team that ranges anywhere from like 5 to 8 people. Some are local, some are in-house, some are online or spread out throughout the US. So for someone, for a team that's a bit smaller than 15, let's say, let's just say like 3 or 4, for really owning projects, it feels like a lot of things, if you're running your own business, can fall by the wayside. Or, you know, it does feel like sometimes people don't really take ownership of the projects, because in the beginning of a business, there's so much going on, right? It's like, guess what? You get to wear this hat, and this hat. And then next month, it might be totally different. How did you manage within the chaos in the beginning when you weren't quite there before you hired that person for creating a culture and owning the projects?
Oh, honestly, I feel like I feel like it's still chaotic now. So first of all, don't worry. I actually felt like we had our shit together way more.
Okay.
When it was like just a few of us in that respect, it was chaos. It's chaotic on a different level.
Okay.
And it's always going to be chaotic. So don't, like, first of all, don't even worry. but I think it's ultimately like a, some of it is an 80-20 rule, I guess, and that it's just, there's an opportunity cost to getting everything perfect, and that actually will stunt your growth. So I think it's okay to accept a level of like, you know, but I think for us, what we always do is we always have like really pay attention to the learnings from everything that we do, but we actually literally document it. And then so we try to make sure it doesn't happen again, because at the end of the day, that's like a really valuable lesson, you know, like it's that saying, like, you know, if someone in your team loses you $10,000, would you fire that person? No, because you just spent $10,000 investing in that lesson for them. Unless they're a total idiot. But so, you know, and the thing is, like, when you make mistakes, I think it's actually great, because you're doing it now and not when you have more at stake and the business is bigger. I think it's really, there are people who just like are so committed, and I'm the one that has to tell them like, it's okay, don't worry. Like, they're just, it's, you know, I have to tell them it's fine. Like, compared to some people who just, you know, they never really care nearly enough. So I think it's about finding the right people. I'm not saying go get yourself a HR professional, within the team, but just like to really delve down to what the core problem is, as opposed to like, so you're not putting out fires all the time, and you're just doing that. And sometimes it's one big change that sounds like, it sounds impossible, but you know, I don't know. I feel like it sounds too scary, but that's the thing. I think it's all about doing those things that are big and scary, because if it's doable, then that's kind of, if it's easily achievable, then you would have done it already. And it, you know, every other business like yourself will just naturally organically grow. You know, that's how you have to set yourself apart from other businesses.
So what's some of your biggest failures that have turned into amazing lessons for you? And let's just talk about even this last year.
So we didn't scale up our customer happiness team enough for growth. The business was growing and, you know, we were projecting high growth, but we weren't hiring enough people to man the tickets and man our like phones. And we, over one weekend, we had, over the Easter long weekend, which is a 4-day long weekend, we had a coupon code for a sale that didn't work. And so everyone started emailing in about the sale. And then we also had some delays in shipment as well at the same time. But it was all of a sudden, we have an end of day KPI where we don't want more than 100 open tickets, just like at a certain time of day.
Yep.
And that number went from 100 to, it got up to 4,000.
Like, oh, man.
It blew out. And then, yeah, so we kind of realized that, you know, we needed to, you know, we kind of needed to go from this small business mentality where we want to minimize costs and we're constantly battling with this because we don't have investment. We want the business to grow sustainably so that it doesn't blow out. We don't overspend. So we kind of like, we don't want resources sitting there idly. But then that's what we kind of learned, that if we want to grow, we need to kind of like spend early, spend ahead, and just like really back ourselves and plan for that growth, which sounds obvious, but we weren't doing this in this year.
No, that's so true. Spend early, man. That's some of the scariest things I think for entrepreneurs to hear is, you know, the theme of everything that you've been talking about has been kind of like, I invested back, I made this, then we invested back. And then you have to spend early and you have to prepare for growth. And it's like, if you want to grow, you really do have to think in terms of that and put the money back in. And I think for a lot of people, especially new business people, they're just like, oh, when I make money, you can get the mindset. You're like, oh, that's my money. Like, this is now what I'm making. And you're like, actually, no, when you're creating a business, right, it's like you may not be making a lot at all in the beginning if you really want to get to where you want to go. So for you, when was it that you got to sit back and be like, not that you're sitting back, but that you got to be like, oh my God, like this has dramatically shifted my life. And this is, you know, something that's going to be somewhat regular, you know, moving forward.
I actually don't remember that moment.
You're like, I was too in it.
Yeah. I didn't take an income for like, I think 3 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But I think I was just like pulling out money to pay for credit cards whenever I needed, but I never like actually took an income. God, yeah, I don't know. But
I think that's so important for people to hear though, is like there wasn't even a shift because your passion was probably just like, wow, no matter what, you were committed to it. So were you committed like that from the beginning, or did it just switch, or what was the moment when you were like, I am in this, like no matter what, this is not going to go down?
I think just I've always been thinking like that. I just never thought. And I think especially the bigger Shopify's the brand got, the more I was like, this is it. Like the bigger it got, I'm like, well, I'm never going to be able to do this again. Let's make this work. Like I don't want to have to start over. Because there's a lot of people who are like serial entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
But I don't think I am. And I think serial entrepreneurs get bored when they're working the business and they're just doing more day-to-day things. Whereas I think now I'm actually doing more exciting things because the business is growing. I feel like I'm actually doing more new things. I think I've just been really like, this has been it from the start for me almost. And because it hasn't been about the money, it didn't take long for myself to be in a place where I was financially comfortable. And then that was it. I don't really need much more than just comfortable. I want my parents to be taken care of. But even my parents are like very like, they have a very like povo lifestyle. So povo is Australian slang for poor. They just don't take much to look after. So I think as soon as it clocked over to like, making more than my regular, like what I would make as an accountant, even beneath that, I just haven't really thought about it. I think the best thing has been the fact that I've been able to hire people to do the things that I don't like doing. And so I think that's, so my Instagram handle is the Lazy CEO because I just thought that, you know, I think what's one of the most valuable lessons has been like, if I get other great people to do what I'm doing, to do a better job, then, well, it's actually good to be lazy and to let go, because they are way better than me to do something that they're really passionate about and specialized in. And so, you know, every time, I feel like for me, it hasn't been really about the money, but every time my quality of life increases is when we hire someone to take something away from me. So for example, the last hire that we have is our CFO. So taking away all the accounting and finance, because ironically, even though I wanted to get out of accounting and finance, I was still doing it for the company until maybe like a year ago.
Wow.
So I'm like, how did I do this? I'm like doing my dream job, but I'm still an accountant. And so that was like that, like my quality of life literally shifted and improved. My stress levels have gone down. I'm just a happier person.
Oh, that's such valuable advice, is hiring people for what you don't want to do and you're not good at, because just the energy that you get back to be able to put into what you do love is going to grow you so much faster. We've basically run out of time. So I would love, clearly we can both talk. So I would love for you to share just any last bit of advice for people who are in a business who really would love to even experience a sliver of the growth that you've experienced.
Yes. The thing is about me, I always say like, you have to just take risks. Mm-hmm. But when you risk anything, like, do not risk more than what you're willing to lose, because you take the risk and you'll learn. You have to note down your learnings, and then you can need money then to go and reinvest using your learnings.
Mm.
And so I think that's how you can kind of keep doing different things and keep growing the business, but you never like put yourself at risk of the business going down.
Mm. I love that. We actually have like, we always put different money aside just for risks, because I'm always like, well, how are we ever going to know? Like, how will we ever know if we didn't do this? And to me, it's more exciting to do that now than, you know, I just think I can't imagine life without doing it. Like, because all of the good things come from that. So I'm so grateful for you. Thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. I know that there's just like so much more that we could have chatted about, but I'm so grateful for your wisdom. And I'm also wondering where we can find you and where we can follow you.
Oh, amazing. So I'm on YouTube. I'm on Instagram and YouTube as The Lazy CEO. The website is showpo.com, showpo.com. Also on Instagram and YouTube as well. And also on LinkedIn. You can be LinkedIn buddies.
And by the way, I was looking at your site and I'm like, I'm a clothes junkie. So I was like, oh God.
Oh, I know. Oh, Lord. I've seen your site. I'm like, I'm going to have to send you some Showpo, because...
I will gladly take it, because I was literally, it was right before I got on here with you. And I was like, Lori, get out of the vortex. Stop it. Like, you need to not shop and keep researching. So I'm like, oh, my shopping is my research right now. It's fantastic.
Yes.
So I'm so grateful for you. And I always end on one last question. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So you have a quick encounter with someone. It's a total stranger. It's like 30 seconds. You could be in an elevator or just in passing. And they look at you and they ask you, how can I make myself happy? What do you say?
More wine, less wine. That works better written.
More wine or less wine?
Sorry, wine, W-H-I-N-E.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Okay, thank you so much. And you guys, if you love this episode as much as I did, make sure you share it with your friends. And until next time, earn your happy. Bye, everyone. Thank you guys so much for spending this time with me on the Earn Your Happy podcast. I am so glad that you stopped by. If you could take 1 second to share this episode with someone you think would love it, that would be absolutely amazing, and we would be forever grateful. Also, please leave us a review if you feel so moved, by going to iTunes and leaving us an honest thought, an honest comment. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you want to hear more of. It would really help us out on our journey to helping thousands and thousands of people. Until then, don't forget to earn your happy. Thanks again, guys. Bye-bye.